This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Contributing editor at Fandango, Eric Davis, is going to join me to talk about movies and entertainment news. Thanks for joining me, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so there are two movies I wanted to talk to you about, and the first one was Crawl. Did you get a chance to see that one?
I did see Crawl.
What did you think of it?
You know, I had a good time with it because it was the perfect kind of creature feature for the summer. It felt like a bit of a midnight movie. Once it got going, it didn't let up. There were no times in the film where I felt like I was checking my watch. It gave you everything that I feel like you would want from a movie that has that premise, which I appreciated about it.
What attracted me to this movie was the producer, Sam Raimi. Everybody else, it was almost like an afterthought. And it wasn't until that I was sitting in the theater that I was like, oh my God, I recognize all these names. What is it, Kaya Scodelario? She was the main character in Maze Runner. And I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to see how she's going to do this. Because really, you've only seen her do like a teenager-esque kind of things. And I really wanted to see what would the grown college woman can do. And then her dad was Barry Pepper. And I was like, this is the guy from Saving Private Ryan. I couldn't believe, like, where has he been?
Barry Pepper, you know, he's been a character actor. You've seen him kind of in other things down the line. But I do agree that I feel like we haven't seen him in a while on the big screen. I think he's been on television some. And I thought the two of them together were really great, you know. And I think that you know, to expand upon a premise of, you know, you're stuck in a basement, there's alligators coming after you. You know, you have to hold that for a good 90 minutes. And I think the film did a good job of putting them in different situations where it was never repetitive. It never felt like, oh, they're in the water, the alligator's coming again. It always felt like they had a different obstacle to get around. And that's what I really liked about the film.
What I liked is the whole father-daughter bond. I think the whole premise of the movie surrounded that. Even when they were being rescued, you kind of had a feeling that they weren't going to be rescued. They had to do it themselves. They had to do it together. And I thought that was an interesting take on it, because at some point, you know, with all the, hey, we're going to rescue you kind of tropes, that one of them was going to work. And instead, they kept just pulling the rug right out of you, saying, no, they have to do it themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it was just a good, solid creature feature, you know. And even if you felt like, okay, you know, I got some alligators, I want to see some limbs torn off, you know, right when you want to see that in the movie, they give you some limbs torn off, you know. And so I feel like, you know, that, and I keep saying this when it comes to this movie, but if you go see a movie and you know that the premise is two people trapped in a basement and alligators are attacking, everything I would want to see from a movie with that premise, this film gives you. And I think that's why it's been successful. That's why critics are liking it, because it pays off what it sets up. You know, you have so many movies that give you like they have a great premise, but you just feel like they don't execute it in the best way. This is a film that lives up to its premise and executes it in a way that is super entertaining.
And not just that, also, it was only 86 minutes. I think if it was anything longer, this would have been a bad movie. It being right at that sweet spot, it was perfect. Especially with every other movie that's out right now that's over 2 hours long, this was just a great movie to go just to experience the movie theater.
Yes, you know, and I do feel like there is something to be said for a film with a longer runtime. You're getting your money's worth out of something that's two and a half hours, you know, but there's also a lot to be said for that quick 90-minute film that you're in, you're out, you have a good time, it doesn't overstay its welcome, and you feel like sometimes films like that are a lot more rewarding for people because they feel like, yes, they're shorter, but they don't feel like they've wasted their time, and the movie doesn't waste their time. It just kind of gets to the good stuff and gets out.
So the next movie I wanted to talk to you about was Midsommar. I had the chance to see this, and it was incredible.
Oh, wow. I was really curious to see what you thought, because I know you're a big horror fan.
Okay, so spoiler alerts for anybody who hasn't seen it. I'm going to be really delving into it because I love this movie. And surprisingly, I didn't think it was that much of a horror movie. It was more of like suspense and psychological, but it wasn't as bloody as I expected it to be, especially with the way Hereditary was when, the mom cut her head off. So I was kind of expecting that. It didn't give it to me, but that was okay. This was its own type of slow burn horror, and I really like that.
It was a very different kind of film because it wasn't your traditional horror movie, and that's kind of what I'm liking about this summer so far, is that all of the horror movies are completely different from one another. You know, you're not seeing something that you've seen before. And what I like about Midsummer, and it's actually pronounced Midsommar, if you want to be literal about it. But it's just very different, and it takes place in a world that's not familiar. It's completely original. We've never seen anything like it.
Now, when it comes to Midsommar, the one thing that I went in was that I was thinking to myself, man, Hereditary had so many things in the background. You had to look at everything. Every little minute thing was important to the plot because it actually told you what was going to happen later on. So when I went to see Midsommar, I thought, okay, now I have to look at the background. I have to look at all the little characters that in the back. I can't just look at the forefront. And doing that, you actually could see exactly where Midsommar was going to go. At no point did the characters ever lie to the audience, at least. And that was so exciting because it was almost like you could take it apart piece by piece, scene by scene, as you're sitting there experiencing it. And it was just great. Another thing I thought was really cool was how the people in the village, they were doing the music. So it wasn't just the audience experiencing the eerie tone. So were the characters. And I was like, ooh, so they're hearing this strange music as well as we do. And we get to see their hallucinations, and we get to experience it with them. And it was just a great way to have a spin on this type of horror. And I hope he does more like this, because this gets me really excited.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there is something to be said about the story. It doesn't, I think it's just a really fascinating sort of story to live in, you know, and I think critics have said that they feel like it could have been more of a story. I think, you know, and I want to be careful because some things happen at the end that, you know, are they justified? Do you feel like decisions that are made make sense? But what I like about it is that, you know, I interviewed the director and the cast for this film, and they said the most important thing is look at the walls. I like movies that they create dread, and they create this sense of dread, not just in what the characters are saying and doing, but in the environment. And this is the kind of film where you look around and everything around you informs the story and informs the universe that they're in. And I think those kinds of movies that really take that extra length to set up their world, I think those are really different kinds of movies, and those are movies that we should sort of embrace more often.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're right about looking at the walls. All the panels told you exactly what was going to happen, and it created this history. And this history was so important because you were going into, is it Pele or Pile? His world. And it was just, it was new for the people and new for us. And I thought the underlining of everything in this movie was the excuses. You see the writings on the wall, literally. You see all the things that they were doing. And in the end, they kept making excuses. Oh, it's their culture. Oh, it's this. Oh, they left. And they just accept these excuses. And it was just incredible to see how everything just crumbled because they were, in a way, were they trying to be polite almost? Like, oh, is that what it is? Okay, that sounds about right. And you're just screaming, saying, why haven't you left by now?
That's another thing that I wondered is why. Why didn't they leave? I think they were kind of seduced by the world, you know, and there were a couple of characters that had a reason to be there. They were doing, you know, their dissertation. They were doing like a school project on sort of following this, and they felt like they were in a situation where it really made sense to stay there. But you do wonder, you know, why didn't they leave? And why weren't they kind of, I mean, I feel like if I, as soon as, you know, because you know you're, what you're in for at a certain point in this movie where, you know, a couple of characters do something and you're like, okay, from this point on, this movie is going to take us in a different direction. What I think I really liked it about it the most, too, is that it's funny. Like, there are some dark, humorous moments in this movie that are really amusing.
You know, there was one point towards the end, and it was one of the mating rituals. I hope I didn't give away too much. And it, the entire theater, when that happened, everybody started laughing because it was so absurd. And if some of the characters weren't hallucinating, it would have been very strange to see how they would have really reacted if they weren't inebriated. But it was just really like a weird sensation being in a theater where everybody's laughing during a horror movie simply because it was so slightly uncomfortable and absurd. And it was a great experience, though. I really like this movie.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's unlike anything that you will see this year. Even if it wasn't your cup of tea, even if you've had some issues with some of the way the story played out, it really is unlike anything you've seen. I don't even remember the last horror movie that I saw that took place completely in daylight. I think that is a horror experience in of itself, is, you know, these places around the world where it is daylight, you know, 21 hours of the day. That's scary, thinking that. And what does that do to a person? And so I thought that was really interesting, too.
Yeah, everything about this movie was great. If you haven't seen it, you should go see it. It's not in theaters that long where I'm at. It was only one theater that had it, and it was late at night, but it was well worth it. It was a good movie.
I agree.
Now, switching gears, I have to ask you, have you heard this rumor that Paul Rudd is going to be in the new Ghostbusters?
I have heard it, and it's not a rumor. He is going to be in the new Ghostbusters. He was officially confirmed to be in it, and it's exciting. I feel like Paul Rudd, when you hear Paul Rudd's going to be in the new Ghostbusters, you almost have to think for a second, like, wait, Paul Rudd's never been in a Ghostbusters movie? Because that's how perfect the casting is.
It is. Do you know what role he's going to play, or just that he's in there?
They have not said what role he's going to play. I would assume if you have Paul Rudd in a Ghostbusters movie that you're going to make him a Ghostbuster. Maybe he's the son of someone. A lot of people said, you know, remember the kid, I believe his name was Oscar, from Ghostbusters 2, Sigourney Weaver's child in that movie. A lot of people are saying maybe he's that kid grown up, and maybe he's involved in that business. That would make sense that he was that kid, and he grew up maybe around Bill Murray's character. You know, I think that's the bigger sort of deal around this is, I believe that the original Ghostbusters are coming back. How do they come back? Are they playing their characters? Or are they going to be like the last Ghostbusters movie where they're cameoing but not as their characters? I have a feeling that they're going to bring back the original Ghostbusters. They're going to be reprising their roles from the original two movies.
Well, that would be exciting. Here's another one I'm excited about is Little Mermaid, the live action. They said that Melissa McCarthy is going to be Ursula. Is this true? I hope so, because I think she would be a perfect cast.
Yeah, this is true. She is going to play Ursula. This is going to be another one of Disney's live-action remakes, which, even though critics weren't so crazy about Aladdin and The Lion King, you know what? Those movies, they crushed it at the box office. And The Lion King is going to make, you know, over $1 billion worldwide. And, you know, these films are very successful. And so I'm curious to see now what they do with The Little Mermaid and how they adapt it. This is going to be different from The Lion King because there will be humans in it, you know, but they're going to use special effects and do cool things. So it's going to be really interesting to see. I like the kind of the way this cast is coming together, but beyond Mulan, if you're wondering, okay, what other classics is Disney going to sort of give this treatment to, The Little Mermaid is next on the docket.
Do you think that Alyssa Milano will be in the live-action Little Mermaid? Because she was rumored to be the inspiration for the cartoon. So I think that would be a really cute Easter egg to at least have her in the background somewhere.
She could be, yeah. That would be a fun little Easter egg. I'm curious to see how they do. You know, I've heard that Lin-Manuel Miranda from Hamilton fame and Moana, he may be working on some of the music for The Little Mermaid. That's exciting. So it would be cool to see him involved in that. And so I'm curious to see how this differentiates itself from these other movies. And, you know, this would really be the last of, you know, those early 90s, late 80s kind of Disney animated classics. I look at Beauty and the Beast, The Lion King, Aladdin, and The Little Mermaid as that foursome of just, you know, giant classics for Disney animation before they really got into the 90s, which included, you know, like Mulan and The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And so I think Little Mermaid is the last of those four. And so beyond that, you know, we are getting Mulan. I'm curious to see, does Disney dive into some of those other movies, those lesser known animated films from the 90s before, you know, they kind of petered out. And it was a while before Disney Animation really found their footing again, because then Pixar came along. And then I think Disney Animation found their footing later on when Frozen came out and Zootopia, and now they're a force to be reckoned with. Now Disney Animation is doing a phenomenal job right alongside Pixar. And so it'll be I'm curious to see what other films they decide to do this with, because it seems like they're running out of classics.
Well, I don't know. They could pull them out of somewhere. I can tell you that. There's always a Disney movie somewhere. But I have to get your take on this. Do you think that it's almost like Disney's kind of jumping the shark by doing all their classic animations into live action?
You know, a lot of people do kind of feel like it's a bit of a weird cash grab on Disney's part, but I don't think that, because you know, they're entertaining people around the world. I think it's a new way to sort of celebrate a beloved classic in a new way, and I think that is something that, hey, if audiences weren't into it, they wouldn't be going. But these films are crushing it at the box office. All of them are. So obviously audiences are liking them. Obviously audiences are having fun. And, you know, the experience of watching the animated Lion King many years ago is one that people will never forget, and one that people can still have because that film still exists. But sometimes it's fun to sort of reshape and do something new with a classic, because it gives you a different, unique way to enjoy it and celebrate it. And I think there's a lot of adults, a lot of parents out there that were kids when that first Lion King came out, and now they're going to the new Lion King with their kids, and they're telling you stories about how it came out. Maybe they're watching both films together. So I think it's just a new way for families to come together and these multi-generations to bond over sort of familiar content. I like that about it. And if it's something that brings families together and it helps parents sort of bond with their kids and tell stories about what it was like when they were growing up and these films came out, I think that's a really special experience. And so I think if that's the most positive thing that comes out of these Disney remakes, then I'm all for more of them.
You know, I would be really excited to see Treasure Planet. That was such an underrated Disney movie. That I think it deserves live action, because that I could see that being live action. That would be beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now we're getting into that area, right, where, you know, we're getting beyond sort of the classics everyone knows. And now, you know, especially if you were a 90s kid, now you're going to get into some of those films that, that, you know, maybe aren't as well known. But what I like about that is you can take more risks with them. You know, yeah. Mulan, yes, Mulan is a film that pretty much everybody knows, but I don't know if Mulan it could be considered like on the level of Beauty and the Beast or The Lion King. And so what we're going to see with Mulan is they're going to be a little bit, you know, they're going to be a little bit closer to the original story, and maybe there's not going to be as much music in it, and they're going to take some risks with it. And so I think that the more you get away from those just giant classics that you really can't touch much, the more risks you can take, and the more it opens up to new interpretations of a story. And so that is, I think, the most exciting thing about these next you know, round of Disney remakes, is that they can be different from what we've seen before.
Speaking of things that are different from what we've seen before, I was reading that the new RoboCop is going to use the original suit, RoboCop suit, instead of something different. Do you think this is a good way to go?
I do think it would be a good way to go, because I think something like RoboCop, you know, we've seen a version of RoboCop that was a little bit more modern day, and it didn't do as well. And so maybe they're looking at RoboCop and they're saying, you look, people know RoboCop because of the outfit. That's what they feel is RoboCop. And so, you know, it's not as much of the name as it is the uniform. And so I do think it's smart to put him in a familiar uniform. You know, it's almost like taking Darth Vader and saying, this is Darth Vader, but we're going to trick out his outfit and make it the 2019 version of Darth Vader. And no, I think people would rebel against that, because that's not what they think of when they think of Darth Vader. They think of a character that's in this specific costume. And so I do think when it comes to RoboCop, while he's not as well known as Darth Vader, I think people know RoboCop in that RoboCop uniform. And so I do think it's a smart decision.
Okay, I give you that. That's a great explanation. I can understand that entirely. All right, you're right. You're right on that. Because I was a little upset. I was like, why not try something new? But you're right. Who's going to sit there and know who RoboCop is unless he's in that bulky suit, right?
Well, and they did try something new. They did a RoboCop movie a few years ago, and it was okay.
Right.
You know, it wasn't, and they did a brand new uniform, and it looked modern era, you know, and it looked different. But I think that, you know, sometimes you have characters that are defined by the way they look and defined by what they wear. And if you change that to fit the times, it doesn't necessarily work, because people want to see it as they know it. And that's, it seems like that's what they're going to try here with RoboCop. They still feel like there's life in this franchise, and they feel like they want to give people something that they're expecting, that they're used to seeing when they hear the name RoboCop.
Okay, so now I have to get your thoughts here. What did you think of Marvel's Phase 4 plans?
I like it. I like it because it's something that I've always wanted to see. I have been waiting for several years now for somebody to start making content that lives both on the big screen and the small screen, and they inform each other. And I think the most interesting thing about what Marvel's Phase 4 plan includes is the fact that they're going to have these big movies that you can go see in theaters, but then they're also going to have these shows that utilize existing MCU characters that tie into the movies that you're seeing. And so I think, honestly, that that's going to be the future of entertainment. I think the future of franchises are going to be these franchises that live on the big screen, that live on the small screen. And the story, in order to follow it completely, you have to follow the story to the medium that it's next being told on. And so Marvel Studios, I think if anybody is going to attempt that at a large scale with multiple projects, I think it's going to be Marvel Studios. I think that they have really defined storytelling on the big screen over the last 10 years in terms of the way it's changed and evolved. They've been leaders in that space. And so if anyone is going to take several projects and tell a continuous storyline that goes on the big screen and the small screen and does it effectively and successfully, I think it's going to be Marvel Studios. So that's the most exciting thing to me about that Phase 4 strategy. The most exciting project is Thor Love and Thunder. That, for me, I am such a fan of Thor Ragnarok. I think it's like the best Marvel movie that they made, because it's so crazy. And so I'm so excited for the next Thor movie and Taika Waititi and to see what they do with it.
I'm actually excited for the What If series, TV series. That was always my favorite mm-hmm. comic book. Because everything was so asinine, you know. What if Captain America was a werewolf, and you know, or what if Spider-Man had six arms? What if Wolverine didn't have his adamantium armor? And it was, you know, just all kind of off the wall stuff. And actually, I think there was a what if Thor was a woman, so that came true.
Yes, it did, and I think it's important to note that in that What If series, a lot of these actors are coming back to reprise the voice of the character. So you'll see Chris Evans as Captain America. And so it'll be fun to hear the voice that you're familiar with behind the what-if scenario. And it'll also be interesting to see what Marvel Studios does with an animated property. This is going to be the first time that they dabble in animation. I'm curious to see what their style looks like when it's applied to the animated realm. So I agree. That's another really fascinating property to look forward to.
So the thing is that Marvel has said that they don't want to make a big movie like they've done, like to have all these movies connected. But having Phase 4, the fact that they have a Phase 4 and things are still going to be connected, do you think they're going to have like one big blowout movie to like we had with Endgame?
I definitely think they're going to work towards it. In the Phase 4 plan, remember, this is only 2 years of movies, so we don't know exactly what their next Avengers-type movie is going to be. And so after those 2 years, are they building towards something else? You know, it took a couple of years before we got that first Avengers movie. You know, the first Iron Man came out in 2008, and the first Avengers movie didn't come out until 2012. So keep that in mind, you know, as you kind of think about what are they building towards. I think the next round of film announcements that we get past into 2022, I think will include Black Panther 2, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and whatever the next iteration of the Avengers is going to be. And I would imagine that these 2 years of movies will build up to a third year where we see the culmination of a story in the next iteration of what the Avengers are. But it'll be interesting. Is it going to be the Avengers that they build up to? Are those going to be the big team-up movies going forward, or are they going to be something else? We don't know yet. But I can't see them retiring the Avengers. I can't see them not making another Avengers movie. It's just a matter of what that movie looks like and who is the team and what the story is.
Okay, so here's another movie that I'm curious to see what it's going to look like. And maybe if you didn't hear about it, I'll give it to you. Big Lebowski is supposed to have a spinoff. I don't know why they're going to do a spinoff. I mean, why not a sequel or even a reboot?
Well, it's not the Coen brothers that are doing the movie. Ah. It's a spinoff of the Jesus character. If you remember in the first The Big Lebowski, if you remember the Jesus character, the bowling guy, it's a character following his story. And John Turturro actually made the movie with the Coen brothers' blessing. So that's, I think, why you're not seeing just a true sequel of The Big Lebowski. It's because John Turturro loved playing this character so much, he wanted to make an entire movie about who this guy is. He got the blessing from the Coen brothers, and then he went off and he made this movie. It's rumored to be coming out next year. I wouldn't be surprised if it's something that we see premiere at, like, the Sundance Film Festival in January.
I don't know. I'm a little bit hesitant with this. The Big Lebowski it's a cult classic. I don't think you should be messing with cult classics or trying to add additions to it. But if he's got the blessing, okay, maybe. I'm not sure. How do you feel about that? Do you think they should be messing with this?
I agree. It's tricky territory because it's such a cult classic, but I think it's far enough removed from what the original is that I think it's okay, you know, because it's more character-driven by this guy and who the world is around him and less so about Lebowski. So, you know, I think it works, and I think that I'm curious to see if it could stand on its own because he's a great character in those couple of scenes, you know, but is he a character that you want to spend, you know, 90 minutes, 100 minutes with? I don't know yet. So that's what I'm curious.
All right. So let me know for the month of August, what movie should we jump out there and see?
The biggest ones that I'm recommending are there's a comedy called Good Boys. It's like a raunchy R-rated sex comedy about sixth graders that I think is hilarious. So if you want a raunchy R-rated comedy, see that one. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is going to be my horror recommendation for the summer. Guillermo del Toro produced it. There are monsters in it. It's based on the popular novels. I think whenever Guillermo del Toro is making a monster movie, I think you have to get on board and you have to go see it. So I'm a big fan of that. Blinded by the Light is a smaller film based on the memoir of a kid who discovered Bruce Springsteen in the 80s, a Pakistani kid in London, and the music of Bruce Springsteen changed his life. There are 18 Bruce songs in the movie, so if you are a fan of The Boss, I think you'll really love that film. And then Hobbs and Shaw, that's the big action blockbuster to go see in August. Fast and Furious spinoff, over-the-top action, the very definition of a popcorn movie. So those are my recommendations, a little bit of everything if you want to get out to the cinemas this month.
Well, thanks, Eric, for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
You can find me on social media at Eric Davis, Eric with a K on Twitter, and of course at Fandango.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.